Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, NFL football fans. It's the NFL Exporter, Lance Goodman, checking in Friday, May the 6th, 2016. I'm in conjunction and with the Docket of Bay Sports Station today, bringing you an exclusive special. I'll be touching on a couple different topics from the NFL offseason. I'll be talking about the NFL draft with a focus on the first round and some later round picks that stood out to me as well. I'll also be chiming in on what team picks that I like and looking at the 100 top free agents from the NFL 2016 offseason. And so we're just going to get into some offseason work today. Once again, here today on Docket of Bay Sports Station. And let's hop right into it. We won't waste any time. I know it's about a week after a draft, or I should say last time this week, we were in day two of the draft. And so by now, I know you've heard tons of draft coverage each and every day. And just wanted to get an opportunity to kind of chime in, certainly bring my analysis and perspectives to the table to make sure that whole way across the board, you're fully informed and everything is up to par. And so, look, we're going to get things started by breaking down or really just talking about what went on in the first round of the 2016 draft. Last Thursday was a really, really exciting time and a fun time. The draft took place in Chicago, great atmosphere. As always, you know, the NFL is constantly getting bigger and bigger with the way that the NFL draft goes down. Your number one overall pick was Jared Goff, quarterback from University of California. Certainly has the height, you know, 6'4", 215. I think the young man certainly has a nice upside. Had a chance to hear directly from Rams head coach Jeff Fisher, GM Les Snead. They really like this kid's live arm, his ability in throwing a deep ball, certainly being able to have some mobility and deliver the ball, throwing the football while on the run. You know, I think for each of these players as well, I'd certainly like to address maybe some concerns or on the flip side, looking at kind of the situation they're in. I think for Goff, I think it really boils down to expectation. You know, what is the expectation? When you look at the Rams right now, the way that they're situated on the offensive side of the football, you certainly have a workhorse in Todd Gurley. He's in his second year. The Rams will have a ton of depth behind him. You look at the Rams wide receivers, those were certainly underwhelming guys last year. Tavon Austin was the lead receiver with five TD receptions. The leading receiver yardage-wise was Kenny Britt with just over 600 yards. And so, you know, I'm not quite sure if the weapons are in place in the passing game around Goff to immediately succeed. I think Goff would really need to have good accuracy to kind of make this thing work right now. Things change in the NFL from year to year. Teams will be more prepared for Todd Gurley. You can imagine the situation, I think, where most teams will kind of stack the box or look to stop Gurley first and make the rookie quarterback beat them. And so the Rams also went out and got a couple rookie wide receivers, rookie tight ends. So I think for Jared Goff, you know, the big question is, you know, aside from him or what's really going to help dictate him flourish, I think is the weapons around him. You know, I think that's a big key. I think right now you'd have to say for the Rams, you don't have any proven weapons. You know, Brian Quick, after having a pretty solid campaign before going down with an injury in 2014. Last year, just 10 catches, barely over 100 yards. I mentioned to you Kenny Britt. He's a guy who's battled injuries. He's older right now. And then you have Tavon Austin, who's pretty much relegated to a slot player and a guy who's a playmaker. And so, you know, obviously, look, handing the ball off to Todd Gurley is certainly going to be a golf means to an end. I know the Rams are certainly going to try to establish that power running game, but again, I'm anticipating teams, you know, making that adjustment and putting a higher focus on stopping Gurley. And I think that's where Goff in his first year certainly is going to have an opportunity to see what he's got. And I think, again, his best attribute would be his accuracy because he does not have proven wide receivers. They're also in a very tough defensive division. You think about the Seahawks twice a year, the Cardinals twice a year. Right now the 49ers on offense, you know, don't have the firepower, but certainly defensively they've been able to hold things in place. And so, again, I think Jared Goff is a guy who's definitely got a lot of upside, but I certainly think that the weapons around him, I think the Rams are going to have to get the weapons around him to really help this young man succeed. Number two, Philadelphia Eagles. They went with Carson Wentz. I think we all knew by the time that the draft came around with the Rams and Eagles trading up for the first and second picks, we knew that those were going to be the picks. Carson Wentz, you like the size as well. He's actually a little bit bigger than Goff at 6'5", 237. We know the question marks surrounding him. Again, from an NFL standpoint, my questions remain the same. When you look at the Philadelphia Eagles right now, not a ton of talent. I'd say it's a little better, though, than what a Jared Goff has to work without the Rams. You know, Jordan Matthews, he's entering his third year. He's established. He was kind of slow out the gates last year, but as the season wore on, and now kind of put a little bit of an asterisk there as the Eagles season was dwindling away week by week and it were becoming more and more meaningless, then certainly, you know, some of those numbers and stats were bolstered a little bit. But Jordan Matthews is a established receiver in the NFL. He's entering his third year. He's had some success. And then you look at a tight end, Zach Ertz. Outside of those two guys, though, similar situation in Philadelphia. Not a lot of talent at wide receiver. After that, you're talking about guys like Josh Huff, Jahopin Nelson Aguilar, you know, can kind of find his way. He had a very disappointing rookie campaign. And so, you know, when you look at those two picks with the quarterbacks being taken, as much talent as those quarterbacks may have, I think that we're certainly going to be looking at some type of learning curve involved here. You're figuring, you know, learning the playbook, getting acclimated with the players. And I think more than anything, and I'll just kind of use for an example, I don't believe that he'll be a starter. We don't know that. We'll talk about Paxton Lynch a little bit later on when we get to Denver. But I think comparing him to Goff and Wentz, he is probably in a better situation to succeed. And just in regards to if his playing ability is there, kind of close to what Goff and Wentz can bring to the table, you look at the weapons around him. That's the huge difference. He's got a guy, guys like Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas working outside for him. Guys who are perennial Pro Bowlers, guys who can win their one-on-one matchups, guys who can create separation, guys who can make the big play, you know, pluck the ball out of the air, you know, take a 5-yard in, take it 40 yards. So, you know, just from a talent standpoint that are surrounding these players, I think that is the next step for Philadelphia and for the Rams is getting some big-time players or developing some big-time players to help these teams out in the passing game. Pick number three was Joey Bosa of the San Diego Chargers. I think this was a head-scratcher for a lot of people. Now, look, obviously Bosa had the accolades coming into the NFL draft. Didn't quite wow at the combine, how some had hoped or maybe what the expectation was. I think more than anything, when you're looking at Bosa here, San Diego's playing a 3-4 defense, meaning that he's not going to be coming out of the defensive end position. He's going to be at outside linebacker. For some reason, I don't know why, this pick just doesn't quite sit well with me. When I look at San Diego, and I think it's important to really try to find out from San Diego, you know, what is the game plan here? You know, what in the bigger scheme of things and looking at the landscape of the AFC West, they certainly seem to be the team that's lagging behind. When you look at the offseason moves and what the Raiders are doing, the way that they, I think, at least from my opinion, you know, the next 2 to 3 years, they have a ball club in place as long as they don't lose any major pieces that they can be competing, you know, in the playoffs. And then the Broncos, we know right now they're pretty much just a quarterback away from kind of maybe being seen as an elite team. And so, you know, when I look at the Chargers, look, Phillip Rivers, he's on his way out. Antonio Gates is on his way out. You look on the defensive side of the football, you got a lot of holes there, especially in the secondary. You know, Brandon Flowers coming over from Kansas City. He certainly didn't fill the role that they were expecting for him to be a shutdown corner. And then San Diego has also had trouble running the football consistently. Some of that is by design due to how much Phillip Rivers and Mike McCoy like to pass the football. Some of it is just they haven't been able to get the running game going. So, you know, for me, this Joey Bosa pick, I honestly feel like, you know, potentially Jalen Ramsey may have been a better fit, especially when you look at the wide receivers that are in the AFC West division. I understand wanting a guy who can get pressure on the football. We know that's a premium nowadays. But when you're in the division with Jeremy Maclin, with Amari Cooper, with Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, I think trying to get in there a corner, and I think Jalen Ramsey would have been a much better fit for the Chargers at number three. At number four, Ezekiel Elliott got drafted by the Dallas Cowboys. You've heard all the mixed reviews about this pick right here. I think it's a double-edged sword. I think on one end of the spectrum, starting with the positive, if Elliott, and I think that's the thing that really allowed for him to climb this high up, was when you're hearing reports from pretty much all the NFL scouts. And we know that running back is a position where certain characteristics and attributes are certainly more easy to identify with, because they're the guys with the football in their hand, and you know what you're looking for when it comes to them delivering the goods on the football field. So when you're hearing reviews coming from the top NFL scouts, the insiders, you know, the guys who are closest to the situation, that, you know, this is potentially the best running back they've seen in the last 10 to 20 years. This is the most complete running back that they've seen in the last 10 to 20 years. You hear about how three down running backs in the NFL is a dying breed. You hear about some running backs having to come off the field or early in their careers. They can't be on the football field every down because of pass protection. So it's more or less, he's the full package. You know, it's pretty much, how can you knock the Cowboys for taking, you know, arguably the best player in the draft? You know, and I think that certainly you look at what Adrian Peterson, how he's been able to keep his team in contention for most of his career due to his ability to be a big play, a guy on the ground. I think you look at the type of impact that Todd Gurley had last year. You look at a running back like Le'Veon Bell, how special he is. You know, Jamal Charles, you look at the top running backs in the game. So, you know, those guys certainly have a huge impact on the game. I think from that standpoint, you certainly can't knock Dallas's pick. You certainly understand the thinking about Dallas feeling like, hey, we've got the best offensive line in the NFL. You stick this guy behind it, he should have success. I think on the flip side of it, that is exactly it. You know, I think for the Dallas Cowboys, if you do have the best offensive line in the NFL, and I'd have to agree, you know, for the most part, at least over the last 2 years, I think last year this was my biggest thing. You know, Darren McFadden finished the NFL season last year ranked fourth in rushing yards. He was only behind Adrian Peterson, Doug Martin, and you have to excuse me for not having the third person here at my immediate disposal, but he ranked fourth in the NFL in rushing yards. Darren McFadden only started 10 games last year. He played the majority of those games without Tony Romo or a banged-up Dez Bryant, okay? In essence, if Dez Bryant and Tony Romo were there, you probably could tack on maybe another, I'm just being modest, maybe 150 yards for McFadden, because teams couldn't crowd the line of scrimmage. And then if you figured it, McFadden, if he played, if you kind of paced his yards out over a 16-game season, again, he only played 10 games, you could plausibly say, you know, he potentially could have led the NFL in rushing. So from that standpoint, this certainly was not in what I feel a need pick. I know that McFadden has certainly been injury prone. He's not getting any younger. They brought over Alfred Morris in free agency. He's a guy who's still young enough in his career. You have Lance Dunbar, who's a more of a third down change of pace back. But this pick, what this pick says to me is this, okay? Dallas is saying that their Ezekiel Elliott pick is going to get them in the playoffs every year. That's what I'm taking away from this pick. You know, if Dallas continues to be 8-8, you know, let's say this kid runs for 1,400 yards, but Dallas is 8-8 and they don't make the playoffs, or Dallas is 9-7 and they don't make the playoffs, I'm not going to be impressed. I'm going to say that they could have certainly focused their attention to either Jalen Ramsey, who, again, you're in a division where you've got DeSean Jackson, Kirk Cousins, they like to pass the football. You've got Odell Beckham Jr., and then you got Jordan Matthews over in Philadelphia. And so, you know, I think looking at, you know, upgrading your defense for a team that's been plausible enough on offense, I don't think the Cowboys scoring points has really been too much of an issue since Tony Romo, as Brian, those guys have been in the last couple of years. It's been the defensive inconsistencies, and it's been primarily in the secondary when you look at guys like Mike Jenkins and Morris Claiborne, and particularly not panning out. And so, you know, again, I think this Ezekiel Elliott pick, in a bigger scheme of things, as long as Dallas is making the playoffs, you know, for them it's got to be more than making the playoffs. I mean, again, they've got, you know, only two playoff wins in Tony Romo's tenure there. And he's been there, you know, 7, 8, 9 years now as a starter. So they've only got two playoff wins. You know, it's not been like tons of success for Dallas. They've never been in the NFC Championship game, you know, the NFC Divisional round as far as they've been. So I think Ezekiel Elliott has got to be a guy, if you're picking at number four, it's got to push you all the way through. If not, I think at that point, again, you're going to find yourself wishing you maybe you upgraded your defense. And, you know, you potentially could have had any back at that point, at least that you had in your stable, running for 1,300-plus yards if you have this mammoth offensive line and Romo and Dez Bryant are healthy. Moving over to number five, Jacksonville Jaguars. Jalen Ramsey fell perfectly into their hands. You really like what the Jaguars have done in the offseason, upgrading their defense. We're going to touch on the top free agents a little bit later in the program. But certainly when you look at Jacksonville needing to upgrade their defense, and for Jalen Ramsey, again, I love the pick because you've got to evaluate and look at what's going on in the rest of your division. And if you've got T.Y. Hilton, Andrew Luck in Indianapolis, you've now got Marcus Mariota. He's looking to air it out. Dorial Green-Beckham in Tennessee. I know he's still getting his feet wet. And then you look over in Houston, and you've got DeAndre Hopkins. They added a couple wide receivers through the draft. So, you know, to me, that's where your impact is going to get felt. When you can go out and drop the top-tier player who's going to be an immediate impact, this kid, all the measurables line up in there. I think it's just a matter now of the work ethic, the hunger, the desire, you know, the film study, all the things that go into making these players great. But Jalen Ramsey is a guy that now you can come in and you're certainly hoping, again, you got DeAndre Hopkins, T.Y. Hilton in your division. It's in your best interest to go out and try to get someone who can at least help you neutralize them. Number six, Ronnie, of the from University of Notre Dame. Have to love the pick there. This guy, certainly you've heard the accolade. You've heard comparisons to Tyron Smith. I think there's a very fair assessment when you look at both of those guys' size. Stanley 6'6", 312. This guy just looks the part. You love what he can do. Excels in the run-blocking game. We know that Baltimore wants to do that. And then I think you're helping trying to extend the life on Joe Flacco. You know, he's got a contract recently, but you're looking at trying to make sure that Joe Flacco, you know, quarterbacks, we've seen it, you know, such a high premium in the NFL, the need to have a quarterback who could suffice in there to try to help you the best case scenario to get in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl. So I think that's a very important pick, bringing in Stanley, who, again, I think can certainly help the running game as well as giving Joe Flacco time in the pocket. Number seven, San Francisco 49ers, DeForest Buckner. You certainly love this pick here. This guy in the trenches is actually one of the highest rated players coming out of this year's draft. 49ers had a first-hand look at this kid at the University of Oregon being close by, and you've seen it. Very disruptive. A guy who could certainly cause a ton of trouble opposing teams' running games, as well as creating some pressure on a quarterback. It's a new day in San Francisco. This team is certainly having to recreate its identity, I think most notably on offense. But certainly I think when you look at the landscape of draft picks that were there at the time, that was certainly the way that you wanted to go. I think if this young man can put the work in and pan out, it's certainly what you need. When you look, again, you know that the Seattle Seahawks, they want to run the football. You have to have somebody bringing some pressure to Russell Wilson. Ty Gurley, you certainly want to disrupt the Rams' running game. We know that's going to be their bread and butter right now. And then you look for Arizona, probably the most balanced team in the NFC, but certainly trying to apply some pressure on Carson Palmer and also stymieing up their running game. The Cardinals, one of the better teams in the NFL as far as having complete balance. Number eight, Jack Conklin of the Tennessee Titans, from the University of Michigan State. I apologize. And you absolutely love the pick. We know that Tennessee is a team that's going to be looking to run the football. We know that's what Mike Mularkey wants to do, and that'll create play action, and you have a nimble quarterback back there who's got some nice accuracy in Marcus Mariota. So you get a double-edged sword there. You get a guy who's physical in the trenches who can catapult that running game. They got DeMarco Murray now. They're going to try to have him lead the attack. And then, again, you're talking about trying to protect your quarterback, Tennessee giving up the most sacks in the NFL last year. So I think that certainly is a draft pick. And then maybe it'll also allow for Taylor Lewan to get a little bit more comfortable at one of the tackle positions that he's most comfortable with. So I like this pick whole way across the board. We certainly know that coming into the draft and weeks leading up to the draft, all of the speculation was that Laramie Tunsil from Ole Miss, who we'll be getting to here shortly. He was going to be the first tackle off the board. I think by now we all know about the debacle with his Twitter account being hacked and the pictures with him smoking weed and so on and so forth. I'm bringing up that point now, though, because you have to wonder, if it weren't for that incident that happened right before the draft, potentially could have Tunsil went to the Ravens at 6. Could he potentially have went to the Titans at 8? That is a question that we'll never know. Moving on to number 9, this is a pick that the Bears got from the Buccaneers. Leonard Floyd, outside linebacker from University of Georgia. His stock really took a rise towards the last 2 weeks of the draft. You really seen his name shooting up draft boards. I trust what John Fox and Vic Fangio are doing out in Chicago. John Fox is a guy, it's a proven commodity. You think about his early days in Carolina. You have to hold him responsible for being a big part of what we've seen a defense winning the Super Bowl last year in Denver. He was a part of building that defense the last couple of years prior to being fired from the Broncos after the 2014 season. And so I trust what Fangio and Fox are doing with that defense over there. That defense played well last year. You know, I have to say that they've got a lot of young players over there. It's going to take them a minute to implement that system. But Leonard Floyd's a guy who fits the mold of what they're trying to do. Fangio had a similar type player as far as body prototype in Alden Smith out in San Francisco. And John Fox is a guy who knows how to develop linebackers. And so certainly like this pick here, Leonard Floyd, again, a guy who flew up draft boards. His stock took a lot of hit upwards coming into drafts. And he's a guy who I'm going to be keeping my eyes out for. I love the pick. Number 10, the Giants, Eli Apple, defensive back, Ohio State. This one, a lot of mixed reviews as well. I think from the standpoint of the Giants trying to address their need, you understand it from that point. They're really making attempts and efforts to shore up their secondary. And, look, they went out and got Janoris Jenkins in the offseason. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie is still there. You know, maybe Apple's the guy that they felt that, you know, bringing him in, will give him some time to develop, maybe in the nickel position, maybe to add some depth. I really don't know the thinking. I think that's for most people when you look at some of the other names that were potentially on the board. You have question marks. Now, look, for me, you're talking about a matter of picks. So, look, Vernon Hargraves went 11 to the Buccaneers. You certainly understand that need a little bit more. Sheldon Rankins went 12 to the Saints. Laramie Tunsil was there at 13 to the Dolphins. Carl Joseph was there at 14 to the Raiders. So, I mean, my question is for anybody who's knocking the Giants, picking Eli Apple at 10, is it really about the pick? You know, is Eli Apple, is he not a guy who anybody would draft that high? Or is it a matter of the player? Because, in essence, I mean, if they would have took Hargraves at 10, if they would have took Rankins, if they would have took Tunsil, and those are positions they need. Look, Hargraves plays defensive back. Rankins plays defensive tackle. Tunsil plays offensive tackle. And Joseph plays safety. All of those guys are honestly players that the New York Giants have a need for and would be an immediate upgrade and probably an immediate impact on their defense. So if the Giants would have took any of those guys at 10, would the criticism be the same? That's my main question. You know, is it about taking any of those players was just taking them too high? Because in essence, that really doesn't make too much sense. They would have to pick somebody. Or is the issue more Eli Apple is a guy who there's no way he should be taking that number 10 off the board? So I think that's the question mark that remains around that pick. Number 11, we mentioned Vernon Hargraves, defensive back from University of Florida. Without question, we know the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, glaring need. Their secondary has been a weak link for all too long. You're in a division again, Julio Jones, Drew Brees is looking to air it out, and we've seen the Cam Newton in that offense, their passing game come on strong. So this is a team without question that needed to address their secondary. Sheldon Rankins, defensive tackle from Louisville, love watching this guy on film. I think it's a great pick for the New Orleans Saints. They're a team who we know their defense was an absolute joke. It's really been a joke the last couple years. One of the biggest ways that you could help your defense out is getting an impact guy in the trenches. We think the past years, think about the impact that some defensive tackles have had. Think about J.J. Watt. Think about Don Terry Poe. Think about Sheldon Richardson, Star Luatelli, Fletcher Cox. You know, you think about these defensive tackles coming in. Aaron Donald's another guy. And these defensive tackles are having a major impact. You know, Marcel Darius, he's another guy that comes to mind. These guys are having a major impact, you know, making it tough in the running game and also being able to get that interior pressure to flush these quarterbacks out of the pocket. That's very, very important. And so, you know, Sheldon Rankins, I think a step in the right direction. This guy is going to be from what I can see, an immediate impact player. And I think can be a building block for the Saints as they look to build this defense out from the interior, which I think is a very smart move. Laremy Tunsil coming in at 13. Like I said, won't go too much into detail. We all know the incident now that's happened with the his Twitter account being hacked. That is what we are assuming. Because, again, coming into the draft, and I think it'd be fair to say, by the time the draft came around, maybe the Ravens taking Stanley, we were hearing that late. So that may have not been a shock, but I think at 8, the Titans would have took Tunsil over Conklin if it weren't for this weed incident. And so the Dolphins, in essence, end up getting, you know, a top five player, many arguably the best player in the draft. He's the highest rated player in the draft. And that's certainly an area that you can really never go wrong. I don't think you can, as long as you're not maybe stepping on your own toes. So in essence, you have a Pro Bowler at tackle, then you draft another tackle behind him, and somebody's going to have to sit out. You know, I think if it's a situation where you can be starting both of those guys, you know, two guards or two tackles, or I don't think you can ever go wrong upgrading your offense or defensive line, in particular that offensive line. We know how hard it is to run in the NFL nowadays. We know how protecting your quarterback is important in the NFL. So I don't think you can ever go wrong there. And the Dolphins, you know, at least at this point, it looks like they're going to have a new running back and a second-year player, Jai Ajayi. He's at least got the inside edge. We know that Ryan Tannehill is still trying to get himself established, I think, as a winner in the NFL. And bringing in Tunsil certainly is going to help out in both of those areas. With the preseason intrigue of this incident before the draft, he's obviously going to be a rookie that everybody is going to have that much more of an eye and focus on. Coming in at number 14, you love the Raiders going out and getting Carl Joseph. He's another guy whose stock really took a rise, you know, the last month to 2 weeks leading into the NFL draft. I've certainly got to give a shout-out to Lewis Reddick from ESPN. This is a guy that he absolutely loves coming into NFL drafts, very high up on the board, high on this young man. He's one of the persons who kind of hipped him to my attention, had got a chance to watch him a little bit. But it's there. When you see him on film, I think the only thing that you may have a concern about is his size. He's only 5'10". Obviously, out there at safety, you like to have as much length as possible. But he's the guy who's going to lay the wood down. He's going to make people think twice about coming across the middle. Very active and instinctive player. And I think he fits the Raider mold. The other thing I like, the Raiders went out in the offseason and got safety Reggie Nelson from the Cincinnati Bengals. Now Joseph has got a mentor, a guy who's led the NFL in interceptions, a guy who's been around. Nelson's been around for a while. And I think that'll help Joseph even more be prepared to handle his business on Sundays. Definitely addressing a neat pick. You see right there, great job by Reggie McKenzie, GM for the Oakland Raiders. Number 15, Corey Coleman, wide receiver, University of Baylor. So funny how things played out. The final ratings came in, and Coleman pretty much was rated 2 or 3, depending on how you had your draft boards. The majority of people had Laquan Treadwell 1, and then either Josh Doctson or Corey Coleman 2 or 3. And so he ends up being the first wide receiver taken off the board. It'll be interesting to see. He's got a University of Baylor quarterback there and Robert Griffith III. We don't know if Griffith III is going to be the starter, but the Coleman ends up being the first wide receiver taken off the board, your Biletnikoff winner from last year. I think, again, his size might be the only concern, 5'11", 194, but his 40 time at the combine really helped out. People like his physical nature. I think that's the key. I think at 5'11", is it possible to be a dominant number one wide receiver, picking him at 15. That is what the Browns are expecting. And I think it's the situation here where Cleveland, they're on the clock. We talked about them not having really zero room for error when you're talking about them making the right draft picks. It's an area that they've really suffered in over the past 5 to 10 years on the offensive side of the football, not bringing in players to be able to make an immediate impact or a long-term impact. Rounding out their top half of the draft here is Taylor Decker, tackle from Ohio State. The Detroit Lions, I'm happy to see them address their trenches. You heard me on many occasions say that at least for my taste buds, they've kind of got accustomed to picking up, trying to pick up too many bells and whistles for Matt Stafford in that offense, picking tons of offensive skill players, but neglecting their offensive line. And in essence, you see the Lions constantly dwelling along the bottom of the NFL in rushing yards. And you see Matt Stafford under duress a lot of times when he's dropping back to pass. And so Taylor Decker, certainly they're hoping that he can exceed. If you recall, Detroit has made some efforts over the years to bring in some linemen. Riley Reiff was a draft pick a couple years ago. He's entering his fifth year. They're kind of unsure if they're going to do on his option. But at 6'7", 310, you're certainly hoping that he's a guy who can come in from Ballin on the Big Ten battlefields and be able to help you out immediately. All right, look, we're going to run to a quick break. When we come back, we'll go ahead and take a look at the second half, the rest of the first round of the NFL draft from 2016. Once again, it's the NFL Exporter, Lance Goodman, Dock of the Bay Sports. We'll be right back.
The Niner Empire is a not-for-profit organization which exists with the sole intention of bringing the 49 fans together from all around the globe and enhancing the fan experience year-round. Like our favorite team and our members, represent with class. In addition to celebrating our team through thick and thin, we give back to our communities through charities and outreaches. Proceeds from the TNA membership program automatically goes directly into our community give-back fund. Payments from these funds are made to various charities and outreaches programs throughout the year. So please go visit us at www.theninerempire.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back. This is the 2016 NFL Draft Special. It's the NFL Exporter, Lance Goodman, Dock of the Bay Sports. We just got through covering the first 16 picks of the first round of the NFL Draft. Let's now hop back in and cover the second half. For those of you who are just joining us, also on today's show, we're just going to be, after we cover the second half of the first round, we're just going to touch base on some teams who had some picks, mostly in the second round, some teams in later rounds that we like, we think are good fits. We want to keep our eyes on maybe some guys who slid down a tad bit or had a big name in college and didn't get drafted in the first round. And then we're just going to run through the top 100 free agents to take a look at, you know, what teams were able to address their team needs and round out their rosters and at least on paper, put themselves in position to take another step closer to getting the playoffs and being competitive on a year in and year out basis. Starting now, pick number 17. Look, this was a pick right here that certainly has, my goodness, you have to excuse me, head coach for the Atlanta Falcons. Gosh, why is his name escaping me right now? You have to apologize. I don't have any news or notes in front of me. But the Atlanta Falcons new head coach, I apologize. Dan Snyder. Yeah. I tell you, it's been a while. But this one has his fingerprints written all over it. When I see, Dan Quinn. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, for the having the name wrong there. We're talking about the Atlanta Falcons. They had the number 17 pick in the NFL draft. Dan Quinn, their second-year head coach. We know he came over from defensive coordinator from Seattle. To me, this pick had his hands written all over it. You're talking about Keanu Neal, the safety from Florida, 6 feet, 211 pounds. And when I seen that pick, I said, you know what? Dan Quinn is going to try to model him after Cam Chancellor. And by the time that reviews were coming out from the pick by Atlanta the day after, that's exactly what you were hearing, that, you know, Dan Quinn is the guy who built that defense up over there in Seattle, developing Cam Chancellor in that defense, the versatile safety, a guy can come up, stick in the box to help support the run, can cover the fullbacks and the tight ends on play action plays out of those packages where it looks like it's a run formation, but also being able to drop back in coverage and lay the wood. And again, match up with tight ends and even give a little bit of help there to maybe a bigger slot receiver. And so Neal has all of those attributes. Atlanta as a team just certainly had a pressing need for some help at safety and in their secondary. And I think now when you look at they have their two defensive backs, who I like is one of the younger tandems in the NFL. I think Alford and Trufant have done an outstanding job of learning from day one on the ropes. Those guys were on the field as rookies and kind of learning what it takes to be an NFL defensive back. So both of those guys, now young veterans, I think you stick Neal in over the top. And you think about also last year, they picked up Vic Beasley, who's got some promise. And I think you see Dan Quinn certainly got this defense now headed in the right direction. Ryan Kelly, the center from University of Alabama, you love the pick by the Colts. We know the Colts certainly have a need for help on the offensive line. They're another team that's had a suspect running game and also have had issues in protecting Andrew Luck on a consistent basis. You bring in Kelly. I was a top-rated center coming out of Alabama, a guy who can start from day one and potentially be the anchor and leader on this offensive line that, once again, certainly needs to improve in Indianapolis. The Bills picking up Shaq Lawson at 19 for the University of Clemson. This young man was so excited, always good anytime you see a player like Lawson. But he was one of the guys that the NFL were tracking very closely, so I monitor him throughout the draft. And this guy looks like he's pumped. He's ready to play. Rex Ryan, obviously, losing Mario Williams, wants to make sure he has somebody up front to bring pressure. We know that's one of Rex Ryan's attributes, especially being in the division with Tom Brady. And so I think Lawson is a guy who'll fit. I think the Bills did their homework on him. They seem very excited to have him in. And he's a guy I'll be looking forward to seeing him on the football field, the defensive end position, certainly a position that you can see immediate impact from on the football field. Darren Lee, I like this pick as well, the Jets. Picking him up from Ohio State, outside linebacker. The only knock on him is size, at 232 pounds. Obviously, when you got NFL fullbacks and guards and tackles pulling and involved in a running game, you've got concern there. It'll be interesting to see if they bulk him up some, what's the game plan, because I think that on too many occasions at 232, he potentially is going to be relying totally on his speed and quickness to get the job done. You've got some defensive backs and safeties who are heavier than him. And so I do trust Todd Bowles. We know that from his fingerprints are still all over Arizona Cardinals defense. I trust Todd Bowles. He knows how to he knows how to build a defense. And, again, I think for Darren Lee, your only concern is his weight. 232 pounds at outside linebacker. That's a huge question mark there. Question mark certainly not about his ability. Will Fuller, wide receiver from Notre Dame, going to the Houston Texans at 21. I like the pick. I think especially when you look at the Texans were able to cash in on DeAndre Hopkins late in round one a couple years ago. We've seen the player that he's developed into. They brought over Brock Osweiler. They brought over Lamar Miller, running back from Miami. And I think that now bringing in this rookie wide receiver, let everybody learn new on a job together. You also did see last year with Houston at times that if DeAndre Hopkins wasn't open, not too many other viable threats. We know that Andre Johnson was off to Indianapolis. Nate Washington, a veteran who still was battling some injuries, but they just really don't have, they really never had depth at talent at wide receiver in Houston. And I think they're doing everything they possibly can to try to help Brock Osweiler transition over, be successful, and I think that's a wise move considering the huge contract that they paid him. Fuller was a guy who certainly at the coming into the draft, you've seen his stock rising some as well. The thing you hear about him from everybody, you love his down-the-field speed. You love how he can get vertical and behind defenses. Hands are an area that can be improved, but all in all, this was a good pick for the Houston Texans. Josh Doctson went to the Washington Redskins, dynamic player from TCU. You like his size at 6'2", 202 pounds. I like the pick because you don't have to rush him in. DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon are there. Presumably one of those guys may be gone next year. And so I think it's good for Doxson to be able to come in and, like I said, not have the pressure from day one to contribute. I think it'll be an easier transition if he's a third down receiver, he's getting reps, providing depth behind those guys. And then next year, again, presumably when Garcon or Jackson, one of those guys aren't there, Doxson will be ready to step in as a starter. Laquon Treadwell, he rounded out the wide receivers in the first round, going to the Minnesota Vikings at 23. I think it's a good pick for Minnesota as well. You know, you look at the players who were remaining on the board in the first round, and Minnesota pretty much is strong in all of those areas or areas that they could afford to address in the second round. I think Treadwell now can come in with Stephon Diggs, Teddy Bridgewater. Those guys can try to get the chemistry going. I don't think there's any question at all if there was one knock on Minnesota that you seen last year, and regardless of reason, is that they couldn't pass the football. Let's just put it out there in plain black and white. They couldn't pass the football effectively. You have Adrian Peterson able to do the work on the ground. Teams made stop Adrian Peterson, and it got one-dimensional. Teddy Bridgewater in that offense on a consistent basis could not get it done with the passing game. It was happening in spurts, and I think that Bridgewater, he's entering his third year. We expect for him to be better. Stephon Diggs did show that he wants to be a number one wide receiver. Mike Wallace was still there last year. Again, once players perform, now the name is out, so defenses will be paying Diggs a little bit more attention. But Treadwell, despite the speed question marks that came out of his 40 times from the combine in the pro days, I think he has everything else in the book. And I think as long as he can stay healthy, look, this league certainly needs good possession receivers. And I think his specialty could be a guy who can be dominant in the red zone. So I like Treadwell being on the opposite side of Stephon Diggs. We'll see if they can make it work for Teddy Bridgewater in Minnesota. William Jackson III. The Bengals picking up yet another defensive back. It's obviously an area that they like to stockpile on. When you look at the makeup of their team, I think you understand that pick as well. Again, I think right now when you get to picks really 20 through 32, you start kind of getting down in that area. It may not be about a pressing need because obviously these other teams now, again, 20 through 32, 24 through 32, these are teams that were in the playoffs. So you may not have a bunch of just pressing needs that you're going out and filling in the positions. So I think at this point you're looking at depth and you're just looking at what players you think might fit your system and you want to develop. And I think Jackson III is definitely a guy who could fit in that mold. We know the AFC North is a division that likes to pass the football a lot, especially when you talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. You never can have enough depth there. I think you look at a situation like in Denver and you see where getting a defensive back last year or 2 years ago, excuse me, like Bradley Roby certainly helped because he's got two big time defensive backs on the outside and Roby's able to come in and play the nickel, which is a very, very important position in the NFL, that nickel defensive back being able to match up with a slot receiver, especially on third down and third and short passing situations, but also gives you quality depth. And don't forget for the nickel position, there's also a position that can help out in run support. So you like the pick there. Artie Burns, defensive back from my University of Miami for the Pittsburgh Steelers, without question, a need pick. I think when the Pittsburgh Steelers took a look at the board, you look at the landscape of the makeup of the Pittsburgh Steelers team, the offensive side of the football, well taken care of, defensive side of the football, still in the process of rebuilding this defense. They've gotten a little bit better in the trenches, being able to bring in some players in that front seven who can make things happen. That secondary is an area that certainly needs to get a lot of attention. And Artie Burns, I think, is a defensive back who we certainly heard his name as well, getting a lot of attention coming into the draft. And I think it's a solid pick for Pittsburgh. He's a guy who should have some potential to get a lot of playing time in his rookie campaign. Paxton Lynch, quarterback from the University of Memphis, going to the Broncos. You see the Broncos, a lot of these taller quarterbacks. Brock Osweiler, a 6'6", 6'7", quarterback. The same holds true here for Paxton Lynch, 6'7", 244 pounds. These quarterbacks have been this tall, usually haven't made it in the NFL, but he's a guy who is going to compete, as I mentioned earlier, as opposed to Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, who may be more pro or more game time ready right now. Lynch, if he's not that far behind the curve, he would have potentially a better situation than a Goff or a Wentz based on the team and the weapons around him. You look at Paxton Lynch, what he's got around him. If he did have a situation occur to where he was a starter, you have receivers on the outside in Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, who are proven legitimate Pro Bowlers who can win their one-on-one matchups. They've got excellent route running. They've got good hands. They can create separation. They can catch in traffic. And they're playmakers. They're guys who can make things happen when you get the football into their hands. He's also got a stout defense who's going to keep the games close and not have as much pressure on him maybe to have to pass the football as much on the week-in and week-out basis. The Broncos running game, until I see better, is considered suspect. They had a lot of trouble running the football last year, and I think until we see it, they're still trying to get acclimated to Gary Kubiak and his own blocking scheme. That's an area that's going to be a question mark. But Paxton Lynch, I think, quote-unquote, right now, more a quarterback for the future, developmental, but the young man certainly will have an opportunity to compete in a training camp. The Packers, Kenny Clark, defensive tackle from UCLA. I think this pick absolutely had all in the world to do with losing B.J. Raji to retirement in the offseason. That made Kenny Clark, that pick from UCLA, defensive tackle, something that the Packers immediately needed to address. The 49ers, this was the questionable pick right here. Now, it's not so much about his ability, Joshua Garnett, the offensive guard from Stanford, but the 49ers traded back into the first round to get this pick. I think that's where the question marks stem from. Another Pac-12 player, another guy that obviously the 49ers could keep a close eye on, close by University of Stanford. And again, I think these are Chip Kelly picks. When you see a guy coming from Chip Kelly's old school, you see another Pac-12 players, these are picks that Chip Kelly certainly had his fingerprints on as well. I think the 49ers, again, my biggest concern here for the 49ers, and I understand this is a draft that was not a lot of top-heavy on offensive skill position talent. You know, if you look back through the first round, you only got a handful, really. You had one running back taken, and you had five wide receivers. Outside of that, and let me make sure I got that right, Coleman, and then, you had four wide receivers taken and one running back. Outside of that, your quarterback. So this was a draft that was not heavy on skill position players. So I completely understand that. And, I do understand the 49ers, however, looking to address their offensive line. That's certainly an area that they struggled. They need to open up holes for Carlos Hyde in the running game. You certainly want to protect whoever is back there. And I think when you look at the 49ers, their wide receiver situation being very, very shaky, having a staple and having a good offensive lineman to do the best job you can to afford your quarterback as much time as possible while maybe some of these unproven receivers are trying to get open, that is certainly something that's important. So, again, I don't think this was about the pick. He was an award winner by many rated, the top guard. I think people may have felt the 49ers potentially could have got this pick in the second round. But nonetheless, it's an upgrade on the offensive line. I think right now, though, people are looking at the 49ers to really see what Chip Kelly has in store for that offense. You look at the 49ers, they're a team that the defense has been able to hold it intact despite losing a ton of players. But it's really been their offense that's regressed the last couple of years, being able to put points on the board and move the football consistently. Robert Nkedemeji from University of Mississippi, going to the Arizona Cardinals. You love the pick here. Obviously, character issues and concerns off the football field are things that, certainly cause this young man to potentially slip in the draft. But I think that you look at the organization that he went to, and that's the key. Bruce Arians, his coaching staff, had a respect of his players, very much so. And then you look at the veteran leadership on that team. You see the way that Patrick Peterson was able to embrace Tyrann Mathieu and make sure that he's on a straight and narrow course and handling business the way he needs to on the football field. Guys like Larry Fitzgerald, Lamar Woodley. This is a team that has a very good mixture of youth but veteran leadership. And they've been proven to be able to bring in, veterans and in particular maybe some players who had some question marks off the field. and be able to really embrace these guys and harness them and bring the best out of them. And so this is a guy who's got a lot of potential and upside. I think when a player of his caliber can go to a winning team, it's going to allow him to be able to flourish potentially a lot faster, because he's going to come into a winning environment. Guys are going to be pushing him, and he's going to get a taste right off in his career what it feels like to win, which should develop a certain pedigree. So I like the pick. He's a guy who I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on. Potentially could be a big-time steal in the late round for the Cardinals. You also think about big Calais Campbell getting on the tail end of his career, had a lot of success there with Darnell Dockett. He's a guy who could certainly fit into that mold. The Panthers went out and got defensive tackle Vernon Butler. Certainly their team, you can see looking to stockpile in the trenches. We know that Star Lewitelli, Dewan Edwards, those guys, big bodies up front, certainly doing wonders for the Panthers in that aggressive front seven and that defense. And so Butler will be a guy who can come in and provide immediate depth and get in there and be a part of what became a niche for the Panthers last year, which was keeping fresh bodies coming in that lineup. Rounding out your first round, it was Jermaine Afidi from the guard from Texas A&M going to the Seahawks, 6'6", 324 pounds. We know that last year Seattle offensive line really became unraveled. You got a lot of moving pieces now. Russell Okung, he's no longer there. They lost their center last year, Max Unger, before the season started to the Saints. I think you look at Seattle's offense right now, and they're trying to retool and they're trying to rebuild. Marshawn Lynch had really been kind of the main attraction, the bell cow, really the thing to make that offense go the last couple years. And now that he's gone, I think they're slightly in an identity change. And with losing some offensive linemen, he's a guy who they're going to be expecting to come in and pay some immediate dividends. That rounds out the first round of the NFL draft. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're just going to touch base on a couple teams that we like what they did in the second round, maybe later rounds. But in particular, just wanted to take a look at some players who stood out to us in the who weren't in the first round as well. Once again, this is a Dock of the Bay exclusive with the NFL Explorer, Lance Goodman. We're talking NFL draft, NFL offseason. Don't go anywhere.
The Niner Empire is a not-for-profit organization which exists with the sole intention of bringing the 49er fans together from all around the globe and enhancing the fan experience year-round. Like our favorite team and our members, represent with class. In addition to celebrating our team through thick and thin, we give back to our communities through charities and outreaches. Proceeds from the TNA membership program automatically goes directly into our community give back fund. Payments from these funds are made to various charities and outreaches programs throughout the year. So please go visit us at www.theninerempire.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back to this Dock of the Bay special exclusive. NFL Explorer Lance Goodman just got through recapping and kind of breaking down or giving my two cents, giving my chime in again with the way that the media and the sports world is nowadays. You've got so many different outlets through television, through radio, through podcasts, through websites. E-magazine, you name it, and it's there. And so I think my part in this whole thing and the way that I'm making my niche and really with my fan base, my audience, I think people here at Dock of the Bay as well, the fans out there, the listeners, people enjoy is, you know, I'm more or less of a reference of a guide. I think that regardless of what shows you listen to, what you decide to read, I'm more of a guy who's you make sure that you check in as well. You know, kind of get my perspective on it to kind of make sure that everything balances out across the board. I'm pretty sure a lot of my perspectives and views that I share are the same that you may hear in some other areas or some other shows. Some may be different, And I think that's where, you know, it kind of balances out. I think if you maybe listen to 10 shows on the left, 10 shows on the right, 10 in the middle, and then you came in and listened to the NFL Exporter, I think it's more or less a, again, a balancing act, kind of making sure that the perspectives and the information that you're receiving are on point and are accurate and are fact-based and make sense. And so, again, I think that's what essentially it'll be brought to the table. And, again, my niche and kind of where I kind of fall into the place of this whole thing, like I said, I certainly have a lot of respect, a ton of respect for my peers. It's a week later, and obviously there's still a lot of draft coverage still going on. And so I thought it's only fitting to have an opportunity to chime in as well and give my perspective and views as well. All right, look, let's go ahead now. I just want to jump around to some teams that I like what they did in a draft aside from their first-round picks. Buffalo Bills, outside of grabbing Shaq Lawson. Look, Reggie Ragland, I know there were certainly some red flags that came up on him, his speed. I know he had an injury, but I think that he's a football player. I think that's the biggest thing. I think Alabama is a school that has a proven commodity when it comes to their defensive players, and particularly at linebacker. C.J. Mosley's a guy, as of late, who came to mind. I'm not saying he's in that exact mold, but you figure a linebacker like Ragland, he has the instincts. He's a thumper. I think he's a guy that will fit into Buffalo. You look at the AFC East, I think teams are a little bit balanced. Maybe everybody not looking to pound a pill per se. I think with it being a passing league, I think Ragland, does he have the all-around ability? I think linebackers as of late, some that come to mind, Patrick Willis, you know, Luke Kuechly, and those guys being able to drop back in coverage as well as a defender run. Obviously, that's your prototype. But I think for what Rex Ryan is trying to do on defense, I think that Ragland's a good fit. And then Adolphus Washington in the third round, 6'3", 301 pounds, I think adding some depth. We also know that Kyle Williams is getting a little bit older. He had to miss last year due to injuries. And then Cardale Jones, you know, I think this is a wild card pick. The Bills, I don't want to say uncertainty. I think I like what I've seen out of Tyrod Taylor. If he can certainly back up what he did last year at quarterback, just maybe even have a repeat numbers that he did last year, because he's a low turnover guy, 6 interceptions. He had the lowest interception count for any quarterback who threw the minimum required balls last year. So I think as long as Tyrod Taylor handles his business, he deserves to be the starter. But we've seen it in the NFL. You can never have enough depth. You can never have enough quality backups. And I think having a quality backup at the quarterback position is probably the most important that you potentially can have on your team. Moving over now, the Baltimore Ravens, Ivy Newsom just continues to do a fine job. Look, now these guys had a total of 11 picks. I believe it might have been, it's anywhere from 11 to 13. Let me see here. I apologize. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Okay, yeah, 11 picks. So I think just being able to accumulate that many picks, that in itself speaks to wise GMing, wise front office, because if things fall in your favor, you do your homework. And kind of just by nature, if you pick up 11, you make 11 draft picks, there's no reason that 5 to 6 shouldn't pan out on GP. And so, look, bringing in Stanley in the first round was great, but I like depth as well. They go defensive end with their picks in the second and third round. And I think you look at Baltimore, that's been a staple of theirs, is that defense, and in particularly being able to create a pass rush. And when you think about Terrell Suggs now, he's getting up in age in his career. He's battling back off an Achilles. He had a bad knee injury a couple years before that. Elvis Dumervil, he's been battling the trenches for years. So I think being able to bring in a couple young guys who can work in behind these guys, really learn the Raven way, be able to learn from two of the elite pass rushers wouldn't help you. You know, I think that's a big key there. And providing some depth. And, you know, creating a situation that when Suggs and Dumervil maybe are getting towards the tail end of their careers or not being able to play at a high level each and every Sunday, these guys certainly will be able to step in. Again, if they can bring that quality depth, they may even help the wear and tear on Suggs and Dumervil slow down and help those guys be able to stay around for a couple other years. So I like that as well. I mentioned to you earlier about Chicago, Leonard Floyd. I also like what they were able to do. And when you look at the rest of their draft, and it's about building on defense. You know, you look at them taking Jonathan Bullard defensive tackle from Florida in the third round. They go inside linebacker and a safety and defensive back in the fourth round. And, you know, I tell you, what I really like about John Fox is he's a guy who knows how to build a defense. I think if you look at the NFL, it's all about trends. It's all about trends, and it's all about blueprinting success. And I don't think that John Fox coming over to that NFC North division didn't have to take a look too far. And look at what Mike Zimmer's been able to do in Minnesota, been able to come over there from Cincinnati. In 2 years, he's been able to turn that defense into a perennial top 10 defense, and has been able to do wonders in helping Minnesota to be able to transition over into helping Teddy Bridgewater have the time to develop. And I think John Fox can take a look over there and see that. And then you look at the way that Chicago played defense second half of the year. If you remember an impressive victory on the road at Green Bay, in which they played well against Aaron Rodgers and company. But I really look Vic Fangio, John Fox, I think is a match made in heaven. And they're certainly a team that if they can get Jay Cutler to play at the level that he's being paid and make sure they get the ground game going, because they let Matt Forte go. You know, Jeremy Langford is a guy they're going to be leaning on now. We'll see maybe if another rookie competes. You lose Martellus Bennett. Now, look, you still do have Alshon Jeffrey, who's had the problems with injuries. You're expecting Kevin White back. So I think it's a question marks around their offense, but their offense could be suitable enough. I think that this is a team, and John Fox and Vic Mangio, that they're building that defense, and they're able to look at what Minnesota's doing and try to implement something implement something similar. You know, as much as it is a passing football league, you still do see a lot of NFL teams taking the approach of running the football, playing solid defense, especially if the quarterback position is a question mark. And that's going to continue to be a marquee in the NFL, regardless of how much of a passing league that it is. We move over now to the Dallas Cowboys and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we're going to tie those two in together because you're hearing such high remarks for Jacksonville taking Miles Jack, and rightfully so. When healthy, you can see it on film. This guy's a top 5 to 10 pick. There's no doubt about it. Versatile linebacker. I mentioned Patrick Willis earlier. I spoke about Luke Kuechly. C.J. Mosley is a guy who can fall back into coverage as well, moving out of that linebacker position. But Miles Jack, you could see it. You could see it in him. And if this kid can get healthy, then Jacksonville, in essence, got two top 10 picks in the first two rounds. Okay, so that's something that certainly you understand there. But Jalen Smith, certainly a lot of people knocking the Dallas Cowboys for taking him. I think the big thing that you wonder about there is, what was Jalen Smith rated prior to his injury? See, I think that's the key right there. I think that with Jack playing last year and Smith missing a lot of time, that's where your disparity is coming in. The reviews on Smith are excellent. And I think that if him and Jack were healthy, both of those guys are linebackers now that you're probably looking into to getting taken in that top 15 to 20. So I think from that standpoint, but I think because of maybe of what type of injury it is, then that's going to bring question marks around that for Dallas. But one thing's for sure, if that young man can get healthy and pan out, and I think that's the thing with Jack, it's just a matter of time for him, then both of these guys are going to be able to make an impact. And I think both of these guys have a chip on their shoulder. But I think out of the two, Jack is a guy that, boy, I tell you, he just looks the part. And he's a guy that you want to see on the football field because his ability is very, very impressive. You move over to the Houston Texans. They're another team. I think, again, look, bringing in Will Fuller, you bring in the offensive guard, and then you bring in another wide receiver, a playmaker in Braxton Miller. So, again, I just like what Houston is doing on offense in terms of addressing the offense, right? The defense, for the most part, has been able to carry the weight. They've struggled on offense. It's been struggling in the passing game. If DeAndre Hopkins isn't open, Arian Foster's battled injuries. Well, look, and then we've had question marks at the quarterback position. We bring in, hopefully, our answer at quarterback. We bring in a running back who wants to be a feature back. We don't have any problem feeding the running back 20 times a game. We've seen it with Arian Foster. And then we're trying to get some help for Osweiler in the passing game, as well as DeAndre Hopkins. We want to make sure that if Hopkins is being tightly covered or doubled, that the passing game just doesn't stymie for the day. So I think bringing in that guard, bringing in the receiver, I think Houston is making all the right moves on offense. I think the mindset, You know, and the way that they're going about doing this is certainly in the right manner. Minnesota Vikings, I like them bringing in McKenzie Alexander. Alexander coming into the scouting combine was rated the highest. See, that's the thing that you love about the scouting combine. You love about pro days. You know, by the time, you know, the couple-month process goes on, you have guys who are at the top who end up, you know, falling. You have guys who may be middle of the pack, not too heavily talked about. They end up rising. You love the shuffle that goes on right prior and leading up to the draft. And I think that Alexander is a guy who falls into that category. His size became a concern. Lack of interceptions became a concern. But I think what helps him, and to me, you know, I did a segment maybe about 2 weeks prior to the draft, but it was really talking about, and it was on the Facebook page as well, you know, what has the biggest impact of these rookies being effective, you know? And a lot of it we discovered, or when we got the votes in from the fans, we got through talking about it, it's coaching. Is the player coming into a winning environment? Is the player coming into a winning pedigree of organization? Is the player coming in to a situation that's conducive to him being the best that he can? And I think that a situation here, we were talking about late, that's why a lot of players on teams who get late-round picks are flourishing. I think it's a prime example. I think Alexander will have an ability now to come in and learn. It's a system in place. I don't know what Mike Zimmer is doing out there in Minnesota, but this defense is – he's turned that defense around, and it's a serious situation out there. And I think it's perfect because you got Xavier Rhodes out there who's turning the corner now. You got another cornerback out there that they drafted who's doing well. But Terrence Newman, the savvy veteran, was over there last year. And I think with Alexander coming over now, without having to be pushed in right away, I think being able to sit back and learn and absorb and get those reps in, and your playing time is kind of manufactured throughout the season. And I think that type of preparation is going to make McKenzie Alexander potentially, because we know this kid has the work ethic. So I think it's just transitioning his skill set onto an NFL level. And again, you have to understand, the knock on his side. You know, these receivers nowadays, for the most part, who are dominant, 6'2", 6'3", maybe a little bit better, you know, these bigger, faster, stronger receivers. So you certainly understand that being a concern. Move over to the New Orleans Saints. I think you like what they did as well. Mike Thomas, look, you're still kind of looking for some quality receivers there for Drew Brees. Still wants to be featured in that passing game. Bringing some depth behind Brandon Cooks, Willie Snead. Those guys are young. New Orleans, I think, still just kind of each year putting the fishing net out there and just trying to bring in as much talent as possible to surround Drew Brees with. And I think whatever who's going to be like after Drew Brees, I think that's key as well. Wanting to make sure that, you know, each year picking a couple guys, bringing them in, and I think by the time that new regime does start with that next quarterback, you've got some strong weapons in the passing game to rely on. And then Von Bell, we know that they've certainly struggled at safety. Kenny Vaccaro, after a great rookie season, he's kind of backtracked. Jarius Byrd hasn't lived up to the expectation with his contract, so I think bringing Bell over, a guy who could be physical, I think a hard hitter, a guy who can go out and compete, you certainly like that pick there. You go over now and you look at what the Tennessee Titans did. Kevin Dodd, we know he's a bit raw, but Tennessee, desperate for a pass rusher. He should have a chance to come in there and compete. And then you think about Derrick Henry. We know we've seen him took his draft stock, took a huge slide. I think a lot of his stuff had to do with his weight and mentioning he could keep his weight down. And I think with the biggest knock on that, and that really did cause for his draft stock to plummet, is you're talking about, think about Eddie Lacy and the trouble that he had with his weight last year. And then you think about Trent Richardson, whose NFL career hasn't gone that well. And all of a sudden people start looking at the University of Alabama running backs with a little kind of looking at them in a little bit different of a light. And I think that hurt Derrick Henry, but he'll have an opportunity to compete. They've drafted traded for DeMarco Murray. I don't think there's any question he's going to be the lead horse there. But I think Henry now, again, a guy can come in without tons of pressure from the beginning, and it'll allow for Tennessee to really evaluate what type of back that he potentially could be. Tampa Bay, I think you like them picking up Noah Spence. We know that he was a wild card coming into the draft. We know that there were some things that caused his stock to drop. Defensive end, 250 pounds. We know that's not ideal. Now, look, they're saying he's Von Miller type in size. And that's my concern, because is he Von Miller side, Von Miller type in speed? See, there's a big key to me. Von Miller is able to get away with being 250, 60 pounds, because Von Miller has great hands. He has an elite set of pass rushing moves, but it's his speed. And I think that's the thing that we're going to keep out for Noah Spence. This could be a nice sleeper pick here for Tampa Bay. Also, you like Seattle getting Jordan Reed, a defensive tackle in the second round. That's a big part of making their defense click, is being stingy between those tackles. And if you recall in their glory days, I shouldn't say their glory days, you recall the year they won the Super Bowl, they were extremely tough. They were tough in the trenches when you think about having at that time Red Bryant as well as Chris Clemens up in those trenches alongside Michael Bennett and some of those other guys. See, I had a lot of depth in those trenches. And so I think picking up a guy like Reed here in the second round is an excellent pick for Seattle as well. And excuse me here, the last team that we're taking a look at, I apologize about that, is the San Diego Chargers. Now, look, I do understand that Joey Bosa was a bit of a question mark, but I think you look at Hunter Henry, the tight end from Arkansas. He was the best tight end in this year's class. We know that they lost Ladarius Green in free agency to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Antonio Gates is definitely down to only a little bit gas left in the tank. And so I think bringing in a tight end, I'm really high on bringing in young players who can learn from guys who are first class in the NFL. And I think being able to come in and learn behind Antonio Gates and have a veteran quarterback like Phillip Rivers, I think it sets this guy on a straight and narrow path and sets him up to be an effective player. Should be able to contribute in the blocking game. And again, I think it's about the future. I think by the time that whoever the next quarterback after Phillip Rivers is, we know that a tight end can be a quarterback safety net and best friend. And if this young man continues to develop, he should be a solid pro in a couple years when Antonio Gates is ready to hang the cleats up. All right, look, we're going to run to one last break. When we come back, we're going to run through the free agents. We're going to take a look at the 2016 free agent class. I'm going to tell you some players going to places where I really, really like it. The NFL Exporter, Dock of the Bay Sports Radio. Don't go anywhere.
The Niner Empire is a not-for-profit organization which exists with the sole intention of bringing the 49er fans together from all around the globe and enhancing the fan experience year-round. Like our favorite team and our members, represent with class. In addition to celebrating our team through thick and thin, we give back to our communities through charities and outreaches. Proceeds from the TNA membership program automatically goes directly into our community give back fund. Payments from these funds are made to various charities and outreaches programs throughout the year. So please go visit us at www.dninerempire.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back. Dock of the Bay Sports, NFL Exporter, Lance Goodman. I thank everybody for tuning in. Just got through running down the first round of the NFL draft. Also, taking a look at some names in the NFL draft, primarily guys in the second round that we certainly are going to be keeping our eyes open to see how these young players are going to fare moving forward. Now, to complete kind of just some off-season work, let's run through the free agents. Just want to touch base on some guys that I like, get some analysis as well. Running through the list here, Josh Norman going to Washington. I love it. You know, I think that the Redskins are another team. Certainly when you look at the makeup of their roster, secondary has been an Achilles heel for years. They have the money to spend. I think now you're looking at Josh Norman really just having an opportunity to prove himself. He's going to be facing Dez Bryant twice a year. He's going to be facing Odell Beckham Jr. twice a year. He's going to be looking at Jordan Matthews twice a year. He wants to be paid and called the best defensive back in the NFL, and I think he'll get a chance to prove it because he's not going to be able to come over there and I think, kind of hide or mask in He's a guy who wants to step up and take the responsibility and lead role. You got two of the top 10 receivers in the NFL in that division. And, again, it's a glaring need for Washington. So I think as long as he can come over there and play at the level that he did in Carolina, he'll be absolutely fine. He's a guy who does a lot of talking. He likes to prove it on the football field. And I think it's a situation now where I don't want to say he's under pressure, but he's certainly going to have a spotlight on him and be expected to come in and change things around immensely for a secondary that, again, has really underwhelmed over the last few years. We know Malik Jackson went to Jacksonville. My only knock here was the money. I don't ever want to knock a player's money as far as, you know, these guys have worked their lifetime for it. But I will really need to see a huge impact. And I'm talking about when you pay a guy 6 years, you know, maximum $90 million in contract, you know, $50 million or so guaranteed. I need to see it. And that means that I need to see Jacksonville's run defense, you know, top 10, you know, 12 minimum. I'm expecting, you know, 60 plus tackles. I'm expecting, you know, he's interior lineman. So, you know, at least, you know, 8 plus sacks. And he needs to be very disruptive in order for me to be justified. You know, I'm in the mindset of, you know, he got paid all that money off of 44 tackles and 5 sacks last year. And you have to look at the other players that are around him on the Denver Broncos are not going to be the same players around him in Jacksonville. And so I understand that a lot of times it's about the market. It's about being hot at the right time. I understand that Jacksonville certainly is looking to address their defense, which they've done an outstanding job doing. But again, for me, it's got to be justified. And again, unless I see Jacksonville's run defense improve to being a top 10 against the run, I need to see him with a lot of hurries, a lot of pressures, and I need to see him upwards of 60 tackles, and I need to see him upwards of 8 sacks. If I don't see those things, if I'm not seeing Jacksonville's defense maybe as a whole being better, if I'm not seeing more W's, then I'm looking at this thing and saying, guys are getting, you know, contract doesn't justify it. Same is going to hold true for Olivier Vernon, 5 years, $85 million. Again, I understand Giants definitely need a pass rush. It's been an area that they've been very bad at for years now. So I completely get it. It completely fills a need. I would probably be more willing to accept his money than Jackson because he's rushing off the edge. And that puts him in a position to be much more disruptive and have an immediate impact. But it's still the same standard and expectancy rate on my end. Coming in that much money, addressing the team's need, they need it. I need to see the Giants in the playoffs. I need to see their pass defense, even if it's not him maybe making a sack. I need to see other guys getting pressure. I need to see the quarterback. I need to see other teams. I need to see the turnovers up for the Giants. You know, for me, it's about being justified. Yeah, I need to see him continuing, you know, minimum 10 sacks, no excuses. You know, there's no excuses. So, you know, those two guys who were the highest paid in free agency, aside from Brock Osweiler, probably maybe a couple other guys here we'll stumble upon. But, absolutely not. It needs to be justified in order for it to make sense to me. Marvin Jones, wide receiver from Cincinnati, going to Detroit, 5 years, max $40 million. I'm fine with it. They lost Megatron. They want to make sure they have another quality receiver. I actually think it's a very good pickup. Quiet is kept. Jones has certainly shown some ability playing next to A.J. Green. Obviously, he's going to play second fiddle. He's certainly going to be option 1B here. Golden Tate's been there longer, so he's got a better rapport with Matt Stafford. I would assume with him knowing the offense better, you know, he'll still be the primary target. But I think providing a legitimate second option for Matt Stafford is something that was important, especially on a team up to this point that hasn't been able to run a football effectively. I think that Jones is certainly a nice addition at wide receiver, a guy who's you know, certainly earned his stripes here in the NFL and been an effective player. And Eric Weddle, safety, going to the Baltimore Ravens. I get it. Same thing. The Ravens' secondary has been in shambles. Just never been able to recover from Ed Reed leaving. Weddle's on the tail end of his career. For whatever reason, it keeps playing back in my mind about the the way he tried to arm tackle Adrian Peterson in the game last year. I don't know why that's the one thing that Weddle's a very good player. Don't get me wrong. Been a pro bowler. He's up in age now. I think that with him being in the AFC, it helps because he's familiar with some of the teams that the Ravens will play. I think it's a good fit, you know. I think my main concern here is that the teams he's in the AFC West. Excuse me, AFC North. Teams like to get vertical. He's going to be tested, you know, having to play against Big Ben, having to play against, you know, Dalton and A.J. Green. But just from a need standpoint, I completely get it. Hopefully he can come over there and provide some leadership and stability. I think that's the expectation. His coverage skills are a little bit questionable. I don't know. He's kind of towards the tail end of his career, but it's an upgrade, again, when you consider how poor their defense. I think, you know, the Ravens, they're kind of like making that last push. They got a lot of veterans. I think getting pressure is going to help as well. That really will help out Baltimore on the back end. Kelechi Osemele, you love that pick by the Raiders. They're one of the standouts from free agency, really cashing across the board. You look at him coming over now. He's entering the prime of his career. And you've got to say, if not the NFL, the Raiders definitely have one of the best offensive lines now in the AFC. He's really going to come over there and just, do wonders to a line that's athletic. When you think about Rodney Hudson at center, they were able to re-ink in Donald Penn. So their offensive line is looking good. Travis Benjamin, he's going over to San Diego. To be honest, the way I see it, it's just another weapon for Phillip Rivers. It's going to be difficult for me to take San Diego seriously until they improve their defense. That's just being keeping it real. Alex Mack going to Atlanta, the center from Cleveland. You love that. Certainly provides some stability, some leadership. He wants to win the Super Bowl. He's late in his career. That offensive line certainly could use an upgrade. I think that's a perfect fit. You love that there. Bruce Irvin. Going to the Raiders now. You like that as well. The ideal situation, you're thinking. Him and Khalil Mack teaming up, getting pressure on the quarterback. If that comes to fruition the way we all envision it, then, opposing quarterbacks certainly going to be under a lot of duress on Sundays. Janoris Jenkins going to the Giants. Certainly, again, need. I have no problem with it at all. Giants defense as a whole has been horrible the last couple of years. So being able to get somebody to bring pressure and then being able to get someone to help out in the secondary, it was necessary. And Janoris Jenkins, he's a proven commodity. I like the way he's battled and fought in for the Rams. He's a guy who will take on opposing team's number one receiver and, again, be physical. And he comes away with a good amount of interceptions. And I like the kid's tenacity. Brock Osweiler, again, I need to see it. I need to see it. The body of work, what I've seen in Denver, doesn't justify this number. I get the whole quarterback need and what the market price is and so on and so forth. But this is my expectation for the contract I'm seeing. 4 years, $72 million. Again, I don't know how much is guaranteed, probably $50 million or whatever. What I need from that is, number one, we need to be in the playoffs. Okay, we made it in the playoffs last year. Now, granted, Andrew Luck was hurt. And they were going through issues in Indianapolis, but we got in with a 9-7 record. So it wasn't like it was overwhelming. So number one, minimum 9-7 record. We need to be in the playoffs. Now, I'll tell you this much. If they don't make the playoffs, then I can understand because the AFC conference is tough. If they don't win their division, which Indianapolis, with Andrew Luck back healthy, I'm assuming even if it's by a very slight edge, although I'm quite sure this Houston Texans team, a lot of people are going to be putting their money on, okay? Are putting their faith in, but if they don't win their division, it's two playoff spots left, and those two playoff spots left, man, it is a dogfight in the AFC for those two spots. So I think for me, for Brock Osweiler, for it to be justified, I need a winning record, not 8-8. I need 9-7 minimum record. You really need to be in the playoffs, and with Lamar Miller and Deion, you got number one receiver in Hopkins, and bringing in guys. I need to see, you know, minimum 3,500 yards. I need 25 TD passes, and I need 12. I'll get 12 or less interceptions. Those are the type of numbers that I need to see yearly and to be improved upon. If I don't see that, again, it's not worth your while. Moving on here, Robert Griffin III to Cleveland. Man, I just, I'm a firm believer in talent. And, look, Corey Coleman, they drafted him. Only so much you can expect out of a rookie. I don't know if Josh Gordon's going to be back in the fold, but he's going to be rusty. He's got to really work his way back in. We don't have a guarantee it's going to be the Josh Gordon of old. I do like to have Gary Barnage. He seems to be an emerging. You know, we've seen one-hit wonders. We've seen players be here today, gone tomorrow. So, in regards to Barnage, he seems like he's an emerging top-tier tight end, okay? Hugh Jackson is going to try to figure out. You have to speak highly on Crowell and Duke Johnson. So, it seems like they're trying to put some moving pieces there together. Offensive line is another concern of mine, okay? You lose Alex Mack now. Had trouble running the football last year. To start with RG3, is he healthy? That's the key. The last time I seen him and when he was back out there, he was not healthy. He was still running with a limp. It was not a full stride. And that plays into his confidence. If he's not 100%, if he can't escape pressure, if he can't roll out, if he can't run out of bounds, if he can't make things happen, that was a huge part of his game. If he's still running with the limp, I'm going to be concerned, and it's going to make me overly concerned if Cleveland can't run the football, because at least from what I'm seeing, I don't know if the weapons are quite in place yet for RG3 to be successful. And so, it's one of those things that we're going to be closely keeping our eyes on, but I'm certainly erring on the side of caution here. Sean Smith, DB from KC, going to the Raiders. Again, Reggie McKenzie, outstanding job in the offseason bringing in players. Their secondary has certainly been an area that they've struggled with. And going out and get Sean Smith, and I think bringing in a player in division helps in two ways. He knows the Kansas City Chiefs very well. He's familiar with the division. Matt Forte going into the Jets. They lost Chris Ivory. They bring over Forte. I think having Fitzpatrick at quarterback is what makes the situation go. If they got to go with one of these lesser guys, then I think the running game potentially, teams clamp down on that a little more. If you don't have the passing game you had last year, but Forte's a quality player, no knock on him. He's going to do his thing, but I'm trying to look at how it can fit into the equation of helping the Jets get into the playoffs, which they're very close to doing. You do like Casey Hayward, defensive back from Green Bay going to San Diego. Solid pickup there. They definitely need help in their secondary. He should be able to come over and upgrade. I like Hayward a lot. Mario Williams now in Miami. Potato, potato. I don't know how much more effective he's going to be than Olivier Vernon, but he's supposed to be back happy. He's in the scheme. Playing at an elite level, which he did the year prior, I'd expect for him and Cameron Wake to cause offenses a lot of havoc. Russell Okung, he's in Denver now. I guess a little more suitable for what Gary Kubiak is trying to do there. Danny Trevathan, he's back in Chicago. You see what I mean about I like what Vic Fangio and John Fox are doing, And Trevathan was a guy who was with Fox over in Denver, so I love it. I love the way Chicago's building their defense. Alex Boone, Andre Smith, those guys now are in Minnesota. Offensive lineman, that's a guy from San Francisco and Minnesota. You love the way that they're trying to keep their line beefed up. Swinging through here quickly, Reggie Nelson to the Raiders. You love that as well. Again, the Raiders just doing an outstanding job of addressing needs. He's going to be back there at safety. Tashawn Gibson going from Cleveland to Jacksonville. Jacksonville, another team doing a great job of addressing needs. Damon Harrison going to the Giants. Certainly needed to get better in the trenches. They were able to do that. I'm going to stop here. I got Chris Ivory going to Jacksonville. I like what he's doing as well. I think that they needed a tougher runner. They're looking to be able to convert on some shorter third down conversions. We know that Ivory's a very, very tough runner. And then Jeff Allen going to Houston as well. So you see that you're trying to bolster up their offensive line. I tell you what, I'm short on time, so we'll come back another day. We got plenty of time. We'll do a special. We'll go by team instead of by player. And look at some of these free agent moves. But those were some of the free agents up to the point that I made it in the list that I certainly like what those teams are doing in the offseason. All right, look, everybody, I appreciate you listening to the show today. Once again, it's the NFL Exporter, Lance Goodman, here chiming in today on Dock of the Bay Sports. You'll be hearing a lot more from me this upcoming fall as NFL and fantasy football approaches. And make sure facebook.com/NFL Exporter. I tell you what, just go to NFLExporter.com. That's www.NFLExporter.com. And you can get direct links to my Facebook, to my Twitter. You can check out the work I did from last season. And I appreciate, again, everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll be back with some information soon. Again, we're in the off season here. It's early May, so everybody's kind of winding up and getting ready. But again, it's a 2016 draft special. Had a chance to run through the first round, run through some second, later round picks, and touch on some free agents and get a chance to talk about what I like about the direction that some teams are heading in. All right, that's going to do it for today's show. Until next time, it's the NFL Exporter signing out for Docker Debate Sports.